Notes. Okay, here we go. Okay, good evening, everyone, and welcome. It is so nice to see so many faces, so many familiar faces, some new faces. Estelle brought the Estelle fan club along with her, and that's awesome. Okay, so I want to share with you one of my favorite Talmudic passages. The Gemara in Ta'anis, Daf Chav Beis, speaks about this great rabbi who is walking through the marketplace. And as he's going through the marketplace, he bumps into Elijah the prophet, Eliyahu Anavi. Okay, if you're a big scholar in Talmudic times, that just might happen to you. And he sees Eliyahu and he asks him, he says, "Hey, Eliyahu, is there anyone in this marketplace that is destined to go to Olam Haba, to the world to come, to the Garden of Eden, you know, the great reward in the afterlife? Anyone that you could point out to me in this marketplace that is destined for that great reward?" And Elijah thinks about it for a second. He looks around. He says, "Yep, those two guys over there." Okay, so this rabbi says, "Thank you." And he walks over to the two of them. He introduces himself and he says, "Tell me, tell me what you do. Do you study a lot of Torah? Do you give a lot of charity? Do you pray a lot?" Mm-mm. So he says, "Tell me what you do. Like, who are you? Tell me a little bit about yourself." And he tells them, and these two people say, "We are jesters. And our job is to go, what we do, what we've accepted to do, is that we go around, and whenever we see someone who is down, we make them happy. We bring joy to them. That's all we are. That's who we are." And obviously the message of this passage speaks to the great significance of someone who brings joy to people. We think that's not such a great thing, not so important. There are many, many mitzvot. There's no mitzvah in the Torah. The 614th mitzvah is not make people happy. But you know what? It's really, really important. It's really valuable. And not only do we appreciate that, but we see that also from this Talmudic passage, highlighting and recognizing for all of us and making sure that we all know and recognize how important it is to bring joy to people. So today, I have the great joy of interviewing someone who I think I would say your unofficial job in life, it would seem to me, is to make people happy, Estelle. That is what you do. You make people happy in so many different ways. And we're going to be talking a little bit about that, how you make people happy, because I think we all have so much to learn from you. Just like Elijah pointed out these two jesters, because that rabbi, he wanted that rabbi to appreciate and learn how important it is and how these two jesters make people happy. Estelle, I want you to teach us a little bit today, to guide us and to inspire us and to show us how you do what you do. So we're going to start with a couple of questions over here, a little bit of an interview. We did have a chance to speak before, we spoke a little bit. I won't throw you off too much. We'll have a couple of sneak questions in my back pocket just to keep things exciting. But Estelle, maybe you could just catch us up. You've been part of our shul, part of Ne'er Tamid, part of our community for quite some time. Tell us how that started. How did you join Ne'er Tamid?
Well, I have to give credit to my late husband. It was over 50 years ago.
Wow.
Green Spring Shul. It wasn't Ne'er Tamid. It was Green Spring Shul. And he liked Rabbi Leibowitz, and he was going to be the rabbi at the shul. So we joined. When I say we joined, he joined, because I was raising my kids, and that wasn't one of my things to do. Now, one anniversary... For my anniversary gift, he bought me a seat in shul. So a lot of people like jewelry. He got me a seat in shul, which now I have given away this jewelry, but I still have my seat. So after Rabbi Leibowitz, then came Rabbi Landau, who I love very much. We're friends on Facebook. And now, of course, my dear friend, Rabbi Motzen. So I will not leave the shul, only in that box. I can talk like that. A lot of people don't like to talk about boxes, but you do talk when you're living. You can't say these things when you're gone. And my mother, my father, we could always talk about these things while we lived. In fact, we said to my mother, I know I'm going off the subject, but I said to my mother, when you die, how will we know you're happy? She said, I'll throw you pennies. Now, whenever we find a penny, we know my mother's thinking of us. My friends know my mother's thinking of them if they find a penny. So anybody listening today, if you find a penny, remember it's from my mother. Okay, now get back on shore.
Okay, well, Estelle, I love what you said about the box, and no need to apologize about that. You know, I have a theory. It's not actually my own theory. There's actually quite a lot of literature about this, but it's actually incredibly valuable, a lot of psychological literature, that is. It creates an incredible drive when we are cognizant of the fact that we are mortal. Because if we believe we are immortal, then I may as well finish all of Netflix, Hulu, and Amazon Prime, because, you know, I'll be here forever. So why not? But if I recognize that there is an end to this and there is a box at the end of all this, then that is, and people who are comfortable thinking about that, it's a little scary and it could be overwhelming, and we have to kind of balance that to make sure it's not overwhelming, but people are able to be comfortable with that thought, it's something which could actually be an incredible driver. So I was actually not so surprised that you mentioned the box, and I think that's actually a very, I guess I'll take that as lesson number one, Estelle. And let's go a little bit further. So tell me a little bit, you know, our show, especially over the past couple of years, I think there's been a lot of change, a lot of, new faces. I'm new, I guess, on some level. And I would love to know, and I think many people here would love to know, could you describe what the show looked like? Not just physically, but maybe just describe your impressions of the shul from 50 years ago when you first got that great gift of a seat in shul. By the way, if I give my wife a seat in shul as a gift, that would be a disaster. But I'm glad that you took it in stride.
That's the one thing I kept.
So Estelle, tell us about
why I started coming to shul.
Okay.
My husband came because a man, that's a mitzvah, a woman does not have to come. But I started to come because the Hebrew school that the children went to, Green Spring Hebrew, if you didn't go to shul on Shabbos, you got a U on your report card. Mm. So that's why I had to take my children to shul. I didn't drop them off. I went in also. Because I thought if they're going to go, I should go. And by going, I got to meet such close friends that 50 years from that time, I am still close with these friends. So it was a blessing all the way around. Yes. I love the sermons. That was my favorite part. I do not read Hebrew, but I do read English. And a couple of my friends show me what's the most important part to read. So I make sure that I'm not talking then, and I'm telling people not to talk, so I want to hear what that word is. And I will never talk during your sermon, Rabbi. Anyway, so now my kids are all going to Hebrew there. And what was the next question?
That's okay. No, so first of all, you gave me a great idea. Maybe I'm going to start giving people U's if they don't show up during the week for services. Maybe that'll help some of our minion issues. We'll see if that works. Anyway, I want to try to bring this a little bit closer to one of the main things that I really wanted to focus on tonight and bring it to COVID, because really we're here talking about people who stepped up during this time. So maybe before we talk about the present, can you think of any scenarios during the course of those 50 years when there were any comparable crises that were faced as a community? And I use the word comparable with a few underlines because no two scenarios are the same. But can you think of any scenarios of great crisis that the community as one experienced that you could think of?
Cannot think of anything. The fact that I heard, if you don't have to go to shul, please don't come. That is the saddest thing that I have ever heard. And not the saddest, but it's very sad to tell me, if you don't have to come, please don't come. So, but anyway, I'm waiting. I'm hoping by Yontif, I get to use my seat. If I don't, I'm still buying it.
Great, great. Okay, but that's interesting, you know, and I think that's kind of what makes this all so challenging or perhaps even frightening for many people is the fact that there is no context. You know, sometimes when we go through a difficult situation, you know what I sometimes do, I'll share, I think the first time I spoke publicly, you know, in front of maybe a few hundred people, is actually at Ner Israel Rabbinical College. They ask you, you know, they have a bit of a rotation. So on Shabbos morning, Shabbos morning, one of the students will address the entire school during the meal. So not only are you speaking in front of 300 people, you're competing with the chulent. And so it's a little bit intimidating. Yeshiva guys could be a little bit critical. We're trained to think critically. And so I remember being very frightened at the time and thinking back of some other challenging experience that could guide me, something similar, and thinking about how I, you know, perhaps overcame that challenge. But when you face something which is totally incomparable to something else, as I'm hearing you, Estelle, you've been around for a few more years than me. And so, you know, to hear from you that there's no context, there's nothing to compared to, I think that really perhaps explains why so many people are struggling, because what do I look back to? I haven't experienced anything, and people that I know who have been here for much longer than me haven't experienced anything to compare it to, and that's kind of scary. I'm gonna take a little detour, just like you, and there's a question I've been meaning to ask you since I met you, and I'm interviewing you, so I'm just gonna take advantage of this. Your nickname is Grammy Candy. How in the world, Estelle, did you decide to become a candy woman? Catch us up.
I have to tell you, my granddaughter's on there right now. She's from CMP Appraisals. That is my oldest grandchild.
What's her name?
Her name is Brittany.
Hi, Brittany.
Brittany Rose. Okay. When she was a baby, my name was Grandma. One day I heard somebody call their grandmother Grammy. I thought, wow, that sounds like an award. So I said, Brittany, would you call me Grammy? She said no. She was 2 years old. I said, please call me Grammy. No. I said, I'll give you candy. Now I'm Grammy Candy.
Wow. So I get the Brittany piece. She's your granddaughter. Who doesn't want to, you know, give your granddaughter, that's a very cute story, by the way, but you know, who doesn't want to give their granddaughter treats? At what point did you decide that, first of all, you know, we're a pretty progressive shul, I guess, you know, we actually have two candy women, but to be a candy person in shul, I'm going to use that new term, is clearly a decision, like that doesn't come from nowhere. So at what point did you decide to start filling your purse with, or your bag with tons of candies and making sure that all the kids, all the children got candy? When did that develop and how did that develop?
Okay, that developed when I thought any child, any little child that comes to shul deserves the sweets, whether the mother gives it at home or not. I think they should be treated. But I've always asked the mother first. I hold up a lollipop that the child does not see it. And I look at the mother and she shakes her head, yes. Sugar and shul should come together, sweetness and shul. When they get older, they'll come because they love shul. When they come when they're young, because they love candy.
Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. Like Pavlov's dogs, right? But yeah, that's awesome. I love that. And the truth is, you're in good company. Maimonides, the Rambam, actually writes this exact idea in his introduction to the Mishnayot. He speaks about the fact that it's important to give sweets to children because they come to associate spiritual things with sweets, and eventually they come to see what's intrinsically sweet and not just the sugar coating. So you're in really good company. Really good company. So
by the way, I always ask the child who I don't know to ask their parent if they, because I'm a stranger, they must ask their parent for permission to get the candy from me. Once I know the children, and they also could have an allergy to things. So, and the kids pretty much know if they can't eat a certain thing, they tell me and I have a certain thing for them. So but I will never give the candy without the mother's permission in the beginning.
Love it.
Then it's my choice.
I love it. I love the sensitivity, Estelle. Good for you. Good for you. So let's talk about you a little bit more before we get to our present situation. You know, one of the things that always strikes me is the fact that, Estelle, you are a very growth-oriented person. One thing that I think anyone who ever speaks to you knows, that Estelle does not speak Lashon Hara, right? She is very careful not to speak negatively about other people, and that is beautiful. And I vaguely recall, again, a story. How did that happen? It wasn't like you were, you were taught this in day school or Hebrew school. But at one point, and correct me if I'm wrong, it wasn't that many years ago, you made a decision saying, although you love to schmooze, and we know you love to schmooze, and let's be honest, gossiping, there's something very, people enjoy gossiping. It's something which many people pass their time and connect through. Where did this come from? How did this come about? And you are so militant about it. Again, militant with a smile. But you are so militant about it. It's really inspiring. Where did that come from?
Okay, it started. I went to a shul and heard a shiur from a female rabbi saying that Lashon Hara, gossip, hurts a person, can kill their name. Now, I agree with her. I come home, I'm gung-ho, not going to do any more Lashon Hara, because I was involved with it also, with our card games, with wherever we went. And before I knew it, I was doing it again. So I decided every time I do Lashon Hara, I'm going to put a dollar in tzedakah. It started to cost me too much money, so I had to give it up. And it's not hard. It is not hard to give up. One thing I have to tell you, I was sitting in a sukkah a few years ago at a point where I couldn't get out of my seat. And a young man started to talk about a rabbi. From my seat, I said, if it's going to be something bad about him, could we not talk about it? It's a shantiv. Could we not talk about it? And he stopped.
Beautiful.
Now I'm feeling this guilt. I am embarrassed. So after we got up from the dinner, I went over and apologized to him. I said, I'm so sorry if I embarrassed you. It wasn't my intention. I just didn't. I'm not allowed to hear Lashon Hara. He said it's absolutely fine. He understood. Of course, it stopped the Lashon Hara. I still feel guilt that I did embarrass him. It's something that I have to live with, but he accepted my apology. So I'll live another 20 years with that guilt.
Wow, Estelle, I should really just stop right now and just let everyone just sit with that, because that is awesome. That is awesome. It really takes such, we're all filled with great ideas, but to actually follow through and for so many years and with such determination and really to have the courage to stand up to people and then the sensitivity. I mean, Estelle, that is truly, truly, truly inspiring. And actually, we are going to start a fundraiser for Ner Tamid, the Lashon Hara fundraiser. This is brilliant. You don't have to come to shul. Every time you speak Lashon Hara, send us $5. we don't need a renter. Social haul outs. It's all good. Just kidding. Okay, so you are a social person. You don't speak Lashon Hara, but you're a social person. You are always connected to people. You love getting together with your friends and cards and all of that. A few months, not that long ago, all of a sudden, this thing called COVID, coronavirus, comes on the scene. And you are being told by your family, by your friends, by your doctors, Estelle, just like so many of us on this call, Estelle, you cannot leave your home. You cannot go to the salon. You cannot get together with friends. You cannot go to shul. What goes through your mind at that point?
The first thing that went through my mind is Irma Pretzfelder, Miriam Jacobson, and I every week went to Tudor Heights to visit people that we knew from our building. And then before you knew it, they moved over to Levendale. And so we go to Levendale every week to see our people. And we make them happy for 1 hour, we are happy for the whole day because we did something we thought was right. And besides that, we became three triplets, Irma, Miriam, and I. We usually don't go anywhere with any place like that without each other. But now, with this virus, not only can't we, they don't won't even let us in. So our children could say we can't go in, but we can anyway. The facilities say we can. So I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm feeling sad. I work at Hadassah store. They won't let us do that either. One day, Franny Jacoby, you know Franny Jacoby?
Sure. She's smiling at you right now. Do you see her?
Okay. She called me because her little girl is one of my favorite customers for candy. When she sees me, her face lights up. That's all I need to see, that face. And before I met her baby, he was in her belly. And he's beautiful outside. I love him. She called me one day and let me talk to her. Her name is Geely. Geely. And it was such a wonderful call. I thought, wow, how does she even know my name? So she might have checked how to find out my name. I love the fact that we were never social, just to say hi and shul. And she took the time to call me. That started me. So Franny, you get all this credit. Now I'm looking in my phone book for names that I know. And I start calling them. Of course, I call from the towers. I call those people. I call my relatives. I usually pick about 10 people a day. And some are shocked that I'm calling them, but are very, very pleasant and happy that I did, like I was with Franny. And some are so happy to get a call and we have a little conversation. And a few people said, Estelle, because you called me today, that makes me, in your honor, I'm going to call somebody. So I'm telling you, that is wonderful for me. It made me feel really good. I'm not going to stop calling. If I haven't called you, it's because your number is wrong in the book. It's because some of the people, I don't know everybody in shul, but if the name sounds familiar, I do call them. But I'm sorry if your phone number is wrong or you're not in the book at all. That's why you haven't gotten a call. But I love you all, and I would call you if I knew your number.
Wow. So let me just make sure everyone, you know, completely appreciates what you just described over here. So first and foremost, you know, I asked you what went through your mind when this first started. And the first thing you mentioned was everybody else. So that, again, just an incredible testimony to your character and who you are. Because, you know, what's going through most people's minds is, oh my gosh, how long am I stuck at home? So that, kudos to you. But what Estelle did, and really one of the things that I wanted to highlight today, and you know, our series is called Ner Tamid COVID Heroes. You know, we spoke to Dr. David Main, the CEO or incoming CEO of Mercy Hospitals. We spoke to a mental health therapist, Tikva Womack. When we think of the front line, we normally think of people who are, you know, wearing masks and gloves and they're out there. But Estelle, you're home. I don't know if you've gone too far beyond your bench or your two benches outside of the towers during this time, and you're at the front line because you chose to reach out to people. Not just the people that you know, not just your family, but to reach out to people, 10 people a day. Ladies and gentlemen, that's unbelievable. 10 people a day to call them and just to see how they're doing. And that's amazing. That's really amazing. You know, so many people are experiencing such loneliness, and that's true for people who are living alone and even people who aren't living alone. We're all thirsting for some connection outside of whoever we're stuck with or live with in our home, you know, and it's so refreshing to interact with someone outside of our, again, either ourselves or just outside of our four walls. And the fact that you picked up the phone and made these phone calls, and 10 people a day and committed to making those phone calls. By the way, if you haven't made a phone call, there's a chat over here. Estelle doesn't have your phone number. Give her your phone number or call Estelle, because she's a hoot, as you can see, and she's great to chat with. So that's just amazing. It really is amazing. That is the front line. You have brought the front. You've changed what the front line means to us. And thank you. Really, thank you. It's inspiring. It's not just inspiring. It is inspiring. But you have helped people and you have impacted people. You know, people have told me, they're like, Estelle called me. And some people, I'll be honest, they said, I don't even know who this person is. And I'm actually curious about that because, some of the big fear of making phone calls is calling someone that you don't really know. Or maybe you know them, but you're not sure if they know you. And I could imagine many people on this call right now, maybe it's crossed their mind, I should probably reach out to some people. Then you're like, it's going to be a little awkward, right? They might not know who I am. They might think it's a scam. Who knows? So Estelle, entertain us. Tell us maybe the most bizarre or interesting phone call that you had, if you had any interesting ones since you started this.
I like to start off with sometimes, I give my name. Because they might think it's a scam.
Right.
And when I tell them my name, I tell them where I'm from, and I want to know what they're doing, if there's anything fun they're doing, that maybe I could do that same thing, or are they watching anything on Netflix? I have a list. If anybody wants some good movies, really good movies, I am watching. When I'm not talking on the phone, I'm watching movies or I'm walking. I walk in my apartment. I can't walk outside now. So, I mean, I can, but not with a mask. It's too hot. But anyway, I have someone that I call that I know she's down. No names. And I say to her, so what did you do fun today? She's at a point now when she calls me, instead of crying, she calls me and says, so what did you do fun today? So we're getting the same, a nice feeling with her now. I can talk to her and I don't feel like I'm bringing her down. We're bringing each other feeling, making each other feel good. So I'm going to continue doing this and continue watching TV, continue walking, and truly, truly look forward to coming to shul. And I'm still with my jokes.
I want to come back to your jokes in a second, but I'm just going to pause. I see the smiles, I see the nods, I see the admiration in people's eyes. One person a day? I think that's doable, right? I think we could all make one phone call a day. 10. Not everyone's Estelle Levitas, okay? But I think one phone call a day, I think, is so feasible and so easy. And it's not just good for them. It's good for us. It's good for us to be able to not just connect, but to be able to reach out to people. And even those people that don't know, I'm going to go back to that. Has anyone picked up and said, who? Like, has that happened? Or everyone's like, oh, yeah, Grammy Candy.
No, they pretty much, if they don't know me, I have to tell them where I sit in the shul, and then I kind of let them know who I am.
Okay.
So they pretty much know once I tell them where I am.
Got it. So these are people,
I do greet a lot of people when they come in. I've never seen them before. I welcome them and tell them it's a great shul, great rabbis, bring lots of kids here, young people. Please come back again. So they're some kind of relative of someone who they're coming in from out of town.
Got it.
But anyway, it's a wonderful show.
Thank you. Thank you. So Estelle, let me ask you, and if I may, a slightly more personal question. And that is, there's so much positivity that just kind of like just comes out of you. It's beautiful. Has it been a trying time? Like, have there been challenges? Has it been hard being at home? Help us understand you a little bit, if that's okay, because it's so inspiring. But I think many of us, I'll speak for myself, we've had challenges. It has been hard. Have you experienced that? Have there been setbacks? Has it been challenging being at home during this time?
You mean letting my hair get gray because I can't go to beauty power? Not getting it cut? No, I think that my children, thank God, are well. My grandchildren, my great-grandchildren. What could be better than that? So if Hashem is good to me that way, in which I thank him every morning, in fact, I'm getting even more from now that I'm home. I'm doing a lot more things that I didn't do before, but we won't go into that. But I think I like myself.
That's good.
I don't think it. I do like myself. So if I like myself, I'm going to get other people to like me. And it's not hard.
No, it's not hard at all. It's not hard at all. But I love that.
If you don't like yourself, it's very hard to get somebody else to like you.
That's right. That's right. That's right.
And I try to reach out to people even when they come into our building. Now with the mask, it's hard. But I say, do you live here? And they said, yes, I just moved in. Well, within a few days, I'm coming to their apartment and I'm bringing them ice cream or something.
Beautiful.
Now it's been a little bit of a problem, but I like to welcome people.
Beautiful, beautiful. And I think that's one characteristic that's just so beautiful and that I think people really appreciate is that you didn't use the word, but you're so growth oriented, you know, whether it's Lashon Hara or whatever it is that you've grown in right now, but you're always looking, you're always growing. And I think that's something that, some people look at after retirement, post-retirement is kind of just a time to coast, you know, sit on the beach, drink that tequila, or read a good book or whatever it is. And Estella, that's clearly not your mindset. I mean, it seems like you're on a beach, like you always have that chilled, nice, relaxed aura to yourself, but you're also moving, like you're always growing and changing. And that is something that is, again, just truly inspiring. And maybe if I may, just along those lines, you know, what is the secret behind that? Or maybe if I could even broaden the question, what's your secret? What's the secret behind that energy and everything that keeps you going? All these wonderful initiatives, whether it's the Lashon Hara, whether it's the growth, whether it's reaching out to people now, what is your secret sauce? What's driving you? And teach us some wisdom, because you know so many of us aspire to that, but we don't know where to go, where to look. So teach us.
Okay, there's two sayings that I love. You can never give away a smile. It always comes back. So when you walk in the street and people are smiling at you, it's because you just smiled at them. My other saying that I love, I think it's a book, but I didn't read the book. Happiness is a choice you make. And I'm going to do my best to think of happy things. Of course, you know, we should never be cursed with anything that is worth it. I don't want to ever outlive anybody in my family. Now, I'm the oldest one in my family. I never, never, ever want to sit Shiva again. And I hope God gives me that answer. I never want to see anybody younger than me in my family go. I hope I'm never tested with it. I pray every day that everybody's healthy. But I like, and I have people that have gone through a lot of things and they don't wear it on their shoulder. I'm not going to mention names, but she's probably on now and he knows who I'm talking about. She's had a lot of tragedies. She is definitely an inspiration. She's a pleasure to be with. So that's, you just have to find happiness and share it. Don't keep it to yourself. Share your happiness. Did I answer?
You did answer. And again, as always, you're in such good company. You know, the again, just such a wealth of literature that speaks to the fact that people who live their life making other people happy are ultimately much happier people. And people who are running after their own personal happiness tend to not experience happiness. So it's really that, you know, all of this comes together so elegantly in the sense that you're so other focused, and the fact that you're always looking out for other people and wanting to make sure that they're happy, that they're content, seems to perhaps be one of the driving forces behind your own personal happiness. And that is That's beautiful. That's great. And as I think I've said a couple of times already, just truly, truly inspiring. And I just see there's a bunch of chat. Okay. These are all just, you have a bunch of fan messages on the chat. I just wanted to make sure it wasn't any questions for you. Just a lot of people saying they love you. Okay. But two things that I want to bring this together with. One, if you were inspired in any way by the notion that Estelle at home has been reaching out to 10 people a day, one person a day, really, it's really not, it's not that crazy. And even if these are people who may not know you all that well, people appreciate it. People appreciate it. Again, you know, I spoke to someone, a young person, house is flying, has two jobs. And he said, I was so touched. I don't even know how he picked up the phone, you know, running between things. But that this person in Shul just, that I didn't even know that well, just reached out and called me, whether it's Shul, work, some family they don't always talk to. You'll be a happier person, and I'm pretty confident you'll make the other person happy as well. And it's just a tremendous, tremendous mitzvah to do so. So that's one thing that if I could just, I think one takeaway, you know, it's nice to be inspired. What's meaningful is when we take that inspiration and do something. So please do something with that. I think we're all admiring, but be part of this. Be part of this this incredible cause. The other thing that I want to mention, you know, when I was speaking to Estelle about this, you know, I got my juices and gears working a little bit, and thinking about the fact that there is so much that we could learn from other people. You know, I love what you said, that you call people and you ask them to teach you about some new ideas, new things that they're doing, because we all have things that we could teach each other. And there's all this wisdom that we all have locked up. I mean, really what I would love to do is that for the rest of my life, I should just do weekly interviews with every member of our shul and then move on to the whole community, because everyone has something to share and everyone has something that we could learn from. It's probably not going to happen, we should. We really should, because we really all do have something to share. And so I was inspired by listening to Estelle. I was inspired by many conversations I had with a number of people. I'm going to share my screen. I want to share with you an initiative that we as a community, I'm not going to say shul, we're bigger than a shul, and especially now, we are not bound by four concrete walls. We are a community wherever we are. We are going to begin an initiative which I'm very excited about, because I've learned so much from you, Estelle, and we all have so much that we could be learning from each other. And so the initiative, I'm going to show you the fly over here. Let's see if this works. Share screen. Here we go. Okay. Hold on. One second. And here we go. You see it? You see it? We're calling it Essential Wisdom. And essentially, no pun intended. What we are doing is that we are going to create a journal. I know some of you sent in submissions for our Yiskar initiative, where we heard about your own personal family members. We are going to create a journal made up of reflections from people who are 65 and older, people like who have been at home virtually this entire time, or those who are immunocompromised, who also now and maybe even all the time have been stuck at home. And we would love to learn from them situations, scenarios which they either saw or experienced in their life. You've seen a lot. You've gone through a lot. Scenarios, you know, Estelle, you mentioned that you have a friend that you grow from, that you learn from. We all have people, whether it's a parent who is with us or no longer with us. We all have people in our lives that have taught us how to persevere over adversity. And we are all grasping for inspiration. We're all grasping for direction. And we could gain so much from each other during this time. And so we are going to create a journal. It's going to really come out at the end, beginning of July. We have until June 25th. And I'm inviting all those in that category to please join us, to please participate in creating this journal of shared wisdom. You know, we all are essential. And even if we're locked up at home, this notion of essential people and inessential people is a terrible mistake. We are all, as we know, we are all truly, truly essential. And so I'd love to hear from all of you. And I do want to mention that if you are not comfortable writing, it's not your thing, we have people who are willing to do interviewing. So they'll connect to you and you'll schmooze a little bit and they'll help you write something. But I just encourage you to share, because I know I'll gain, and I think we'll all gain by hearing from some of that shared wisdom from all of you, from all of us. We are all, again, essential. So with that, Estelle, I want to thank you for taking... Oh, I would be completely remiss if we didn't finish with the following. But before we do that, I'm just going to thank you. Thank you, Estelle, for all that you do, for being the candy, Grammy candy. My kids love the candies. And not only that, but I get a special treat, which I've been missing now. Thursday mornings, we have a Chumash class, and Estelle always brings special treats for my kids. That's how they know it's Thursday, because I come home with those extra treats. So they've been missing that. I've been missing that. And I know many of the children have been missing that. Thank you for all that you do, but especially now. It is so, so important that people are reaching out and connecting to one another. That's what makes a community. And I hope that we could all be inspired to do the same. I hope we could also all be inspired to share some of our wisdom that we learned over the years and our own experiences and from the people we learned. Before we sign off, I would be completely remiss. We started off by saying that the people who bring joy to people's lives are ben olam haba. They are people who are going to earn the world to come. And you do so in so many ways. But anyone who knows Estelle knows that one way that Estelle brings joy to people is through jokes. So I asked Estelle to find a joke that is RG, you know, rated, rabbi, I don't know what it stands for. Anyway, but yeah, that's appropriate. So Estelle, finish our evening. Put a smile on our face. Tell us a good one.
First of all, that was the hardest question, the hardest thing to find a joke that was appropriate. But this one is, a young man took his girlfriend to a football game. She had never been to a football game. And he was explaining different things. And in the beginning, when they threw up the coin, she says, "What are they doing?" He says, "They're throwing up a quarter to see which side goes first." So they enjoyed the game. They're on their way home. And he said to her, "Honey, did you like the game?" She said, "I loved it." He said, "Did you understand it?" She said, "I understood the whole thing, except why the whole game they kept saying, 'Get the quarterback.'"
Ba-dum-bum. Very good, Estelle. Very good, Estelle.
And by the way, before we hang up, Thursday, when we can, you must come hear the rabbi. He can have 8 people in the class or 10 people in the class or 2 people. He talks to you. I know when I'm there, he's talking to me. He lets you interrupt because at a certain age, if you don't interrupt, you're going to forget what you were going to say. So he lets you interrupt, and he makes you feel like every question you ask him is important. So please come when we can, Thursday from, he's on time, not Jewish time, on time, 11 to, now it's 11:45 that he leaves. So it used to be 11 to 12. You must come. That's a must. Or you get on your report card.
Thank you, Estelle, for the plug. We're actually doing a Chumash class on Thursday nights at 8 o'clock. But Estelle, yeah, I'm going to unmute everyone so they could all tell you how much they love you. Estelle, thank you for joining us. I hope you all join us next week. Next Tuesday, we're going to be interviewing Mora Rachel, our youth director, who has been doing an amazing job on a daily basis connecting to the kids of our shul and beyond. But Estelle, keep it up. I hope we're all able to grow from you. Check your emails. Check Facebook. We are going to get this journal started, and I'd love to learn from every single one of you. So nice to see you all. We're unmuting. Everyone, tell Estelle how awesome she is. Okay.
Thanks for coming to my house tonight.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for the quarterback joke. We'll remember it.
I have one for baseball, too, next time I see you.